Warriors sound coverage of the NBA Finals picks back up here in Oakland at Oracle Arena as the Warriors and Raptors get set for Game 3 on a Wednesday night. This is a Tuesday here at Oracle Arena, and you know what? When we have the NBA Finals and other big events around the NBA, the big names show up. Our favorite friends from all around the NBA media come here to Warriors ground, and it's a tradition with the starters, Lee Ellis, joining us here on Warriors Sound. And Lee, great to see you. And I'll tell you something, this series has been thrilling in games one and two. Your impressions thus far?
Well, really, I think 1-1's probably fairly accurate right now. I think the Raptors probably played six really good quarters, but then the third quarter Warriors in game two really woke up and put that game out of reach. But having said that, Toronto had a chance still to go two up in this series. If it wasn't for that Andre Iguodala three, maybe the Raptors get a steal or a rebound and they go down and perhaps extend the game to overtime or even win it. So I think the Raptors feel that they probably let that one slip a little, but this is the Golden State Warriors. This team has won championships. They know that they're going to keep on fighting. They're never going to lie down. Considering Clay was clearly injured, obviously Kevon Looney went out of that game, and Steph wasn't feeling great himself, but he sort of found that strength that he needed to go out there and take his team, you know, on his shoulders as he did, and it was a fantastic performance. So I think everyone's probably looking at this series right now and thinking 1-1's fair. Clearly, game three and four, a very important, more so I think for the Raptors. I think if when they go back to Toronto for game five, if they're in that 3-1 hole, things are going to be difficult for them. But if they can go back 2-2 with a three-game series with two games in Toronto, then anything could happen, as Kevin Garnett likes to say.
Trey was representing the starters in Toronto, and you know, you guys with the Basketball Jones show originating in Canada and Toronto had the opportunity to, you know, kind of feel what basketball was then when you guys were there doing that before heading to Atlanta and the NBA TV studios to do the starters and the related podcasts. But when you think of what you're just seeing now and the frivolity and just the energy and what this is, I mean, what do you make of it knowing what it once was?
It is honestly so crazy, because there was a time there where I thought maybe the Raptors would go like the Vancouver Grizzlies and fold, because when Vince Carter came along, it was great. But then the way that ended, it was really messy. Then Chris Bosh came along, and he was a very good player, seven-year player, all-star. He showed he was a talented player, and he committed to staying in the US, in Canada. But then when the Heat came calling, he left. And that was fair. It wasn't like the Vince Carter way that he kind of quit on the team or anything like that. But then you just sort of wondered if that was just going to keep on happening and whether or not the Raptors would ever be able to get over that sort of stigma of being, a non-US team or United States of America team. And, you know, the Andrea Bargnani draft pick back in 2006, that was potentially a turning point. But again, that went sour when Bargnani didn't quite live up to his reputation. And so to see the Raptors then get to the point where Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan really turned them into a good, consistent team of making the playoffs, that was great. But then you wanted to see that next step. And LeBron James had a lot to do with that, saying, you know, the ceiling is basically until you meet LeBron in the playoffs. But now he's left and Kawhi Leonard is there. And here we are, incredibly, in the NBA Finals. And the Raptors are in a good position to potentially win the championship. That is one of the most amazing turnarounds I can remember, because I've been there in some of those dark seasons where fans weren't interested, players didn't want to be in Toronto, you know, it wasn't a great atmosphere in the arena. And so to see now the team and the city and the country really getting behind this team is just incredible, and it's so much fun. It's great for the NBA, it's great for basketball worldwide to see a team actually have success and a chance to win a championship that's not one of your traditional teams.
Lee, thank you so much. And as we set the scene, a game three on Wednesday, game four here at Oracle Arena on Friday, and the series will shift to Toronto for game five on Monday. We will pick up our conversations as always. Thank you so much for doing so. And here at Oracle Arena, we also heard from head coach Steve Kerr, Stephen Curry, and Klay Thompson as we start with what Coach Kerr had to say here today on this Tuesday at Oracle Arena.
What's the latest on Kevin and his status for tomorrow?
So Kevin won't play tomorrow, but he's ramping up his exercise routine, his workouts. And Clay is day-to-day, so he's questionable. And Loon is out, you know, for the series. So there's your medical update.
Andre's
okay. Yeah, Andre's going to play.
Was he able to do anything?
Yeah, he practiced.
Okay. far right.
Jeff Zilgit, USA Today. Steve, with the importance of sports science staffs and training staffs, what do you want the goal to be? You know, what did you learn from Phoenix that maybe you wanted to bring here? And, you know, what is their overall importance in helping put guys on the court?
Well, I think, you know, the idea is to provide the players the best possible care. And I think, you know, over the last couple of decades, it's incredible the difference in the size of training staffs, the expertise, the overall knowledge that we have now compared to 20 years ago. And so you want to hire top-notch people, and you want your players to be well taken care of and to participate in their own well-being. And so we have a really good group. We're very proud of our group and lucky to have them. And our players have done a very good job of being engaged with them all year. And, you know, you just try to stay as healthy as possible. But, you know, you got to be aware that stuff's just going to happen and there's not much you can do about it.
Hi, Steve. Kareth Burke, NBC Sports Bay Area. Going back to Kavon's injury, a non-displaced first costal cartilage fracture, just what is that in layman's terms? And is it a situation where he can't raise his arm?
Well, it's kind of, I think it's in, you know, closer to the breastbone here. You know, it is part of the collarbone, from what I understand, kind of in that, in the joint in there. And so it's not anything that's going to be a problem long term, but it's going to keep him out for the rest of the series, which is obviously a big blow for us and for him. I mean, he's had such a great season, such a great postseason run, and fortunately it won't affect his future, but it's a big loss for us.
Agility of this time of year, the players want to give the most of their bodies, the demands are on it, but it's also the time of year where a long season catches up with you. Just what do you make of the injuries piling up in this moment?
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. You know, and we've been playing 100 plus games for 5 years now, not all of our players, but our team, and so we've got a lot of guys who have played long, difficult seasons, and you know, they take great care of themselves, but you know, there's a certain amount of luck involved with this too, and we know that. We've been on both sides of that. Some of our opponents have suffered injuries. We've suffered injuries. It's just part of the deal. So you just keep pushing forward.
Next question in the back. Josh Peter with USA Today. How have all the injuries impacted Steph's role as a leader and just his ability to stabilize things or efforts to stabilize things, and how has he grown into the role of leader?
Well, he's been our leader since I've been here, and he leads by example. You know, we have, and I should clarify that he's been one of our key leaders. Andre and Draymond I would single out as well. But they all lead in their own unique ways. And Steph leads with his example, his work ethic, his humility. The players all love him. You know, they love playing with him. They appreciate him so much. And I think with the injuries, where he's grown is his awareness, his understanding of what needs to happen, what he needs to do when other guys are out. Just sort of, you know, game management stuff. But he's always been the same person. I think that's the beauty of Steph. He doesn't change. He's a rock, and our guys lean on him all the time.
Hey, Steve. Mark Medina, Bay Area News Group. It's obviously a different set of injuries and opponent, but what do you think it's going to take to have a kind of performance like the Game 6 against Houston where, you know, the star players that are healthy and the bench players all rose to the occasion?
Yeah, and you know, that's not the only time that, you know, that has happened. I mean, I the other night was a good example. We had to finish the game without Clay, without Kevin. We did that in Game 5 of the Houston series, too, when Kevin got hurt. And
So our team is very adaptable. We've got a lot of versatility. And what it requires is bench players being ready to step up like they always are. And guys just playing hard and playing together. And I think you have to be fearless too, which our team is. You can't worry about anything. You just go out there and play and compete and let it fly. And whatever happens, happens.
Hi, Steve. Janie McCauley from AP. We only got to see a half an hour of it. Did Kevin get on the court at all today, or is he? And that's still a step that you need to.
Kevin's going to get on the floor at the practice facility later today. So he did not get on the floor here. He was here for our film session and for some treatment, but he'll be getting some work in this afternoon. And so yeah, he's out for tomorrow, but improving and. We'll just keep updating you when we have something.
Hi, Steve. Ann Killian, San Francisco Chronicle. How challenging is this stretch for you and your coaching staff? I mean, can you compare it to other playoff stretches in terms of, you know, just what you're having to do, playing young players, losing key bodies, trying to figure out the right rotations?
I don't really look at it that way. I haven't even stopped to think about whether this reminds me of any particular year or anything. It's just part of the job, and I think the way we look at it is it's a challenge, and we accept the challenge and embrace it. And both as a team and as a staff, we obviously we're mostly just feeling sorry for the players who can't be out there because that's what they work for. But when it happens, we feel like, all right, we've got to do our jobs and we've got to figure out the combinations that'll make sense. And we just do it. And it's part of the job. And it's, I don't want to say enjoyable because it's dampened by the injuries themselves and you feel bad. I feel so bad for Loon. Especially, Clay and Kevin, we're very hopeful they're going to be back out there. But Loon, much like, DeMarcus, the second game of the playoffs, when these guys go down and, especially during the postseason, you just feel so badly for them. But the job is to move on and give your team the best chance to win. So we just meet every day and try to figure it out.
Steve, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. Boogie just said that the last time he saw a box and one was in middle school. Steph called it a janky defense. I was wondering when the last time you saw a janky defense like that, and how do you think it worked against you guys?
In ninth grade, a team played one against me. So very proud to announce that. I had a box and one just like Steph. So janky defenses have been going on for a long time. What does janky mean anyway? I'm not exactly sure. But
that was Steph's word. I don't know.
Yeah, it was very effective. The key with the zone is, or any janky defense for that matter, it just changes the rhythm. And so watching the tape, we had open looks that we didn't knock down, but the rhythm changed and the look changed. And so it was very effective. They did a good job with that. It's just typically not something you can rely on for big, long stretches of the game. It's probably something you see more often in high school, even college, you see it. But I don't remember ever seeing it in the NBA.
Mark, last question. Yeah, Steve, Mark Berman, New York Post. How did Clay look moving around or shooting? We saw some shooting. How optimistic are you about game three?
Well, he says he's feeling well and that he's feeling a lot better today than he did yesterday, and he thinks he'll be ready to go. But yeah, as I said the other night, that's Clay's always going to say he's ready to go. And what we'll have to determine is that a risk? If he plays, are we risking anything? If the training staff feels good about his ability to go out there and play without making things worse, then he'll play. But if there's a risk, we'd rather give him the next couple of days to continue to heal and hopefully have him out there for game four. But it's literally day to day.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks.
And here on this Tuesday at Oracle Arena, we also heard from Stephen Curry. Let's take a listen.
You referred to the box and one that the Raptors threw at you as a janky defense. Steve was wondering what exactly that janky is defined as. I think we all are. And what did you think of the fact that they threw it at you, and how did it work?
I don't know. That's I don't even know, a little Southern North Carolina slang. I probably just pull out my back pocket. It sounds right. I don't really know what the true definition is. But anyway, it was obviously innovative and unexpected in terms of a defense you haven't seen in a while. But there are obvious things that we could have done differently to try to create better shots. You know, every possession they threw at us, whether it's me off the ball or with the ball in my hands, or, you know, working around other guys. But at the end of the day, that fourth quarter was just kind of weird overall with the pace and lack of scoring. We played amazing defense, and that gave us, you know, that cushion to close the game out and sustain that lead, even though we weren't able to create, you know, much offense in those last 6 minutes. But we'll be prepared for what they throw at us, you know, going forward in this series, and just got to be able to adapt. That's pretty much what the finals is about at this stage, where you got to expect to see literally anything, and a lot of desperation in certain moments of games when they make those type of calls. So we'll be ready for whatever.
When's the last time you saw a box and one in the NBA?
I honestly can't remember. Probably last time I saw was when I had a Wildcat jersey on, though.
Josh, next question in the back.
Josh Peter with USA Today Stuff. How would you regard your role as a leader right now, especially at times when you're playing without KD and Clay? How do you stabilize things or help stabilize things?
Nothing changes. Stay consistent with my approach every year. Whether it's in training camp or in the finals and everything in between, just trying to boost confidence, create the right perspective going into each game, and we do it by committee. There's a lot of different, you know, voices that we have that we rely on, you know, myself, Draymond, Sean, Andre, even Kay when he's able to, you know, provide his input, even, you know, when he's injured and going through his rehab and stuff like that. So we all just understand the moment, and we're very locked in and focused on adapting, you know, to the circumstances that are thrown at us right now, with, you know, a lot of injuries and kind of uncertainty of, you know, even who's going to be able to play. So we've been through a lot, had a lot of different experiences. This is just, you know, adding to that book. So we got to be ready.
Fourth row on your right, Steph.
Logan Murdoch, NBC Sports Bay Area. You kind of just touched on it with the injuries, but you guys have, you know, lost Kevin. Clay's questionable, and, you know, Andre was going through his stuff. How have you guys been able to overcome these types of injuries throughout the postseason?
It's just a continuation of kind of what I talked about after the game. After game two, it's just everybody being ready. The way that we play, I think everybody feels involved on both ends of the floor and has an opportunity to impact the game. Not necessarily, like, you know, scoring every possession, but just playing within the flow and sharing the ball, moving up, you know, playing unselfishly and just a style where everybody's going to get touches and just got to be confident and aggressive. So, again, like, you know, day to day, it's just whoever's healthy, be ready to go, compete, have fun doing it, and, you know, whoever's out there on the floor, just feel like, you know, you can't help us win the game, and a lot of guys showed that resiliency in game two, and it's going to have to continue for us to get three more wins.
Mark here in the front.
Steph, Mark Medina Barry and his group. Andre was saying the other day that one of his sources of motivation was to protect your legacy, and from his perspective, he felt like there's peers that are jealous of what you've accomplished, and I was wondering what your perspective on that issue is.
I mean, honestly, I don't need anybody's validation or praise or them to hype me up as other people in the league. I know who I am. Like I always say, I'm confident in my abilities and appreciative of the stage that I get to play on alongside my teammates, you know, especially these last 5 years. So whatever comes with that territory doesn't really bother me, whether I'm liked or disliked or whether people respect my game or value for what, you know, what it is, doesn't really matter. I have great teammates who understand, you know, one, what it takes to win and just the fun that we have playing the way that we do and the experiences that we've been able to create. So at the end of the day, that's all I'll remember when this is all said and done. Andre is the guy that kind of sets the tone when it comes to the overall perspective of what we're, you know, what we're doing and protecting the conversation around that. But again, at the end of the day, I love playing, you know, for championships and being on the stage and want to continue for as long as I can.
Third row on the far right.
Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area. Steph, when DeMarcus went down in game two of the first round, I think there was a thought that maybe he wouldn't be able to come back in the postseason. Obviously, he's back now, and given what he was able to give you guys in game two the other night, just what is your feeling about having him back among all the other injuries? You get him back, and what does he mean to you guys going forward?
I'm just happy for him, to be honest. I mean, like you said, there was so much uncertainty around his timeline, you know, coming back, and for this to be his first finals experience, you can't be, you know, more happy for him to have an opportunity to really impact the series in a positive way for us. And, you know, game two was a huge step in the right direction in terms of him being able to play that many minutes and just increase his workload with all he's been through this last, call it, 16, 18 months. So happy to have him back. He's going to be huge for us the rest of the series. And you can tell he's reminding people of how, you know, special of a talent he is and how versatile he is and how he's been playing and just getting more comfortable, you know, with his body out there. And I think it's only going to continue to improve as the series goes on.
Last question here in the second row.
Yeah, Jeff Ferrato, Bay Area News Group. Just piggybacking off of what Monty asked you, DeMarcus out there said he expects to be better still in game three. What's your expectation for him? Would you be surprised if you're able to run the offense through him to some degree?
That's one of his main talents, is being able to play make, whether it's on the block or out on the perimeter or wherever he catches the ball. I think for him it's just becoming still more confident in his ability to put pressure on defenses, you know, on the block and use his size, you know, get us, you know, some easy buckets down there. But I think defensively he's been amazing, just trying to be a plug in the paint and even when he needs to come out in the perimeter and rotating and things like that. But again, when you miss that much time and you're playing at the intensity of a finals game, and you're, I don't think he had any minute restrictions, but it goes from, 12 minutes to almost 30 and whatnot. That's a huge jump. So I just got to assume that, you know, his confidence level is going to continue to increase as he gets some more, you know, minutes under his belt. And that should be a good sign for us as a team.
And finally, we hear from Klay Thompson as the Warriors get set for Game 3 coming up on Wednesday night.
Steve said you're day-to-day, but just to ask you directly, do you think you'll play in Game 3?
It'll be a game-time decision. But for me personally, it'd be hard to see me not playing. So hopefully I'll feel much better tomorrow and be a go for tip-off.
John Dickinson, 95.7 The Game. Just to kind of follow up on that, what would the training staff have to say to you to where you wouldn't play? Is it entirely in their hands, or would it also, how strong of a case would you make to go at that point?
Obviously, I'll do anything I can to be out there, but it's all in their hands, and if there's any pain, it would be a no-go just because of the position we're in. You know, this could be a longer series, so there's no point in trying to go out there and re-aggravate it and potentially keep myself out of the whole entire finals instead of just one game. So, like I said, it'll be a game-time decision, but I really want to be out there.
And just how's the pain level for you now, and were you able to do anything this morning other than just some of the shooting we saw?
Oh, it's much better than it was Sunday night, so hopefully the same progress will be made, and I'll be moving like my normal self tomorrow, but pain level wasn't too crazy at all.
Mark, next row.
Clay, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. People like Boogie and Steph have never remembered seeing a box and one in the NBA until Sunday night. What did you think of that defense? Steph called it disrespectful and janky.
I mean, I didn't mind it because we ended up winning the game. So, and Andre got a great look there at the end for the dagger. So I don't think it was the best strategy because we did get open looks, but we didn't score too well in those last 6 minutes. But that doesn't matter because, like I said, we made the buckets when they needed to be made the most.
Front row on your right. Anthony Sutter with The Athletic. Clay, can you just take us through the play where the injury, it seemed to, you know, begin the discomfort when you kind of did the splits there, and then you still played through it, and when did you kind of start feeling the pain where you couldn't play?
I mean, I anticipated getting hit, which I probably shouldn't have done, so I landed awkwardly, just kind of tweaked my hamstring, and when you're moving, it's all good, but right when you stop moving around, it just really tightened it up on me like a knot. And I couldn't really get any full motion anymore. So I called to come out the game because I literally couldn't run like I'm used to. And it sucked, but like I said before, the progress I've made these last couple of days is very encouraging. And if it continues, I look forward to playing tomorrow night.
Next row back.
Clay, right here, right side, second row. I remember last finals that after the game one, actually, you got a swollen ankle from that injury. And what was the mindset out there to make you to decide to play at the game two? Because after that, I remember your ankle just so swollen. Yeah. And then what was the mindset out there? And then do you have the same mindset here when you go into the game two?
I mean, well, last year I think I was in a much worse position than I am now, which is good. So that's a good sign. I mean, injuries are never fun. It's the most unfortunate part of sports, but it tests your character, and you know, playing through pain makes it all worth it in the end, especially this time of the year. I don't think anyone's 100% healthy on both teams, but like I said before, you just gotta, as cliche as it is, dig deep and realize we have months to rest after this and recover. So for me, it's just about doing everything I can up till tip off tomorrow to be able to go, because I hate missing games. I really do.
Next question, fourth row on the right.
Tom Haberstrow, NBC Sports. Clay, you've guarded CP, you've guarded Dame, you've guarded tons of point guards this postseason. You're going up against Kawhi Leonard in this series for a lot of possessions. What kind of issues does he present versus a point guard guarding a guy like Kawhi?
I mean, Kawhi is so big and strong. You can't really muscle him. You can't really force him off his path. All you can do is try to take away his airspace. He's got to become such a good ball handler, such a great shooter, especially in the mid-range, that you got to do anything you can to take his rhythm away. You can tell he plays a great rhythm, especially with the ball when he has a live dribble. So as a defender, you just try and make someone with that much talent and ability a little more uncomfortable, whether it's doubling off a ball screen or switching aggressively or just, you know, picking up at half court, trying to make them work for every possession. Lucky for us, we have so many great defenders, we can throw many looks at them. But Kawhi just presents a lot of problems, and his playmaking has gotten so much better since he first got in the league. He's a complete player on that side of the ball, or just a complete player in general, and much different challenge than what I faced in these last few rounds. So I embrace it, and it's fun to measure yourself against the best.
Just as a quick follow-up, the hamstring, is it offensively just running up and down when you feel it most, or is it, you know, side to side limiting?
I think it's just on when I have to stop on a dime or make hard cuts, you know, that's when you feel it the most. But if I can just be out there, even at 80%, I still think I can be very effective. So I'll do whatever I can to get to that full 100, but if not, I'll still be out there and try and do what I can to help my team win.
In the Guardian, in a situation like this, how do you gauge what's an appropriate pain to play through and what's a pain that you need to say, that's too much, I need to sit out? How do you sort of determine that?
That's a good question. Probably I mean, if you only feel it on a couple moves, you're fine, but if you feel it every step of the way, that's not a good sign. And I do not feel it with every move I make, only on certain ones. So you can kind of play through that. But if it was something that was consistent on whenever I move my leg, or if I ever made if I make every sharp cut or every sprint, that would not be good. But it's only a few exact movements that I really feel it. So that's very encouraging.
Last question in the fifth row.
Dennis from Tencent. Hi, Clay. Coach Kerr mentioned your health condition. You mentioned you're up to day-to-day consideration and game time decision, and he mentioned the word risk. He said it's all about taking risks, whether to put you on the court. So what's your thoughts on those risk-taking thing?
Well, something's got to give. It's the NBA Finals, and I mean, we're putting our bodies on the line every game. That's just the nature of our business, injuries, and obviously we have such a great training staff that they're closing that window of risk for me by the hour. And from the progress I've made these last 2 days, I'm very encouraged that I'll be able to go out there tomorrow night. And as long as nothing's torn or really injured, I'm not too fearful of it, because knock on wood, I've been very blessed with not very many traumatic injuries in my career, and I don't think this one is of greatest concern, but it's just the day and age we live in where, you know, little things can just grow to be big problems, but I don't think this will be one of them.
Again, Game 3, Warriors and Raptors, with the series tied 1-1, set for Wednesday night here at Oracle Arena. I'm Lawrence Scott, and this is Warrior Sound.